Tennessee Tech's education program is ranked in the top 100 for best colleges of education in America. Today we have TTU Education Advisor Chuck Craig in the studio with us. Welcome, Chuck.
Oh, thank you, Jeremy. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming out to chat. So I have not had an advisor yet. I know I have talked to some of your family members, so we'll talk about that too in a minute. But let's start with you. So tell me a little bit about yourself. How you got to where you are. I know you spent some time in the classroom. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, yeah. I'm an academic advisor and an instructor at Tennessee Tech. And it's hard to believe, but I've been at Tech now for almost 19 years.
Wow.
End of this month, it'll be. Or no, wait. No, it's been 19 years. That was August. I'm a month behind.
That makes us seasoned educators.
Yeah. Yes. And then altogether, I have about 25 years in education in the profession. My wife, Renee, who is also a teacher, and you interviewed previously, she's at Upperman High School, and she teaches English and drama there, and she's been there for, I don't know how many years, a long time. And then we've been married, 34 years. We have three grown children, Josh and Jeremy. They're identical twins, and what's amazing is they're both teachers, and they're both now at Cookeville High School.
They should have a lot of fun with that.
Oh,
I don't know if they have yet messing with people, but they should take advantage of that.
I've told them that they need to switch one day, like each of them take the other's role and see what happens. But I know sometimes I've been out with one or the other of them just out in public, and some student will say, "Hey, Mr. Craig," and it's it'll be Josh, for example, and Josh is "I don't know this kid." And it happens because it's one of Jeremy's students, and so that happens a lot.
Yeah. So what do they teach?
So Josh teaches science, and then Jeremy is special education.
Okay.
At the high school. And then we have a daughter, Rebecca, and she's currently working on her master's degree in counseling.
Okay.
So we're definitely an education family. You know, even the counseling you can kind of say is sort of a similar profession.
I think you have a brother.
Yes.
Who's also a teacher?
I do. My brother, Ken Craig, or Coach Craig, he's in White County. And I know for many years he taught math, but I think now he's teaching mainly physics.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I say more power to him. he's coached at different times and reffed. And then his wife, my sister-in-law, Lisa, she is a librarian over in DeKalb. Count.
Okay. So if the bingo card said a dozen or more family members in education, I think we could check it.
Yes.
For today.
Yes.
We could check
it. It's in the blood, so to speak. What else did you want
so
to
then, So then you, so where did you teach when you started?
That was years ago. I started at, it was Haywood County High School, which is in Brownsville, Tennessee, West Tennessee.
Okay.
About an hour from Memphis. And so I taught there, and then I taught a year at a private school in Eastern Tennessee, Christian Academy of Campbell County, and then a couple of years here in Putnam County before I came to Tech.
Okay. So a lot of years teaching a lot of different grade areas. So primarily middle school, secondary?
Primarily middle school and high school.
Okay. Yeah. Along the way. Well, that's fun. So how did you always know you're going to be a teacher?
No. So there's a lot of different, one time I wanted to be an astronaut when I was a kid, who didn't want to be an astronaut,
at some point,
a doctor,
sure, it's a social media influencer now.
That's
the thing that kids want to be when they grow up.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But when I was in college, I got to a point where I wanted to be an attorney.
Okay.
And so I had a major in history, which is a good foundation for that.
Mm-hmm.
And as I went on, and I had, I remember a friend who was a little older than me who had graduated and become an attorney, and I saw just how miserable he was. And I'm like, maybe I don't want to do this. I mean, it's a great profession. There are people who love it, but I just don't think it was for me. And so I decided I wanted to be a teacher. It made sense. I love history. I wanted to help people. And so that's what led me to do that. And so at the time, this was at the Memphis State University then, it's now University of Memphis. I graduated with my history degree, bachelor degree, came back and earned a Master of Arts in Teaching and Curriculum and Instruction.
Okay.
And earned my teaching license through that program.
Okay. So I didn't even know that University of Memphis was Memphis State and that there was a change.
Mm-hmm.
So that does date you.
It does, yeah. It happened not long after I finished my master's degree. Both my bachelor and master's degrees are from there. On both of my diplomas, it says Memphis State University.
Okay.
And then it was like, it seems like it might have been like 6 months after I graduated with my master's degree. That's when they changed, they went around and changed all the signs and everything to University of Memphis. And so I'm like, well, kind of stinks, you know?
Yeah, they did a name delete. So, like, try to prove that. See, that you could make that could be a Jeopardy question. Like, find Memphis State University on the map.
Yeah.
And it doesn't exist.
Not in that name, no.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Huh. Okay. Well, that's kind of fun. So then you made your way to Middle Tennessee from there, teaching along the way. So, let's back up a little bit further. One of the questions I always ask is about a favorite teacher.
Yes.
So I imagine that's someone in the Memphis area.
No,
or going further back.
Further back, fifth grade.
Okay.
And I had a second favorite who would be Memphis in high school, and that'd be Miss Krause. And I was on the yearbook and took pictures, and so she was our yearbook teacher. She was my psychology teacher, and she was one of those, I think some people called her Mama Krause, you know, and she kind of watched out for us, and she was one of those teachers that really cared about her students.
Uh-huh.
So I have to mention her. But also, I have to go back to fifth grade, and that was with Mrs. Strickland.
Okay.
And, I've lived a lot of places. I didn't grow up in Tennessee. But we had just moved to California from Alaska, starting my fifth grade year.
Okay.
And I was horribly behind in math.
Okay.
Just the fourth grade year was awful.
Yeah.
And I mean, that would be my least favorite teacher was the fourth grade.
Okay. Okay.
We didn't really learn anything.
Yeah.
I can remember they had like tables stacked up against the wall. And I can remember me and some of my other friends in there sitting behind the tables reading comic books during class. And it's like the teacher didn't even seem to care.
And so, the California standards are usually higher than other states.
Yes.
Which probably made the problem even worse.
Oh, yeah. So I was horribly behind in math, and Mrs. Strickland, she really took a lot of time, you know, not only to help me get caught up in math, but she really just helped me to feel at home in a new school.
Sure.
And then, too, I remember just some fun projects. She was always coming up with these really cool projects for us to do in class. Like, you know, like we had a garden outside and grew vegetables, which, you know, a lot of kids do that. But for whatever reason, she had us raise mealworms, these little caterpillar things.
Okay. Okay.
So we got to make mealworm mazes and, you know, do all these crazy things, you know, experiments with them. And
so she made it fun.
She made learning fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, did you carry any of that into the classroom with you? Any
I hope
of that,
so.
Like that fun,
yes.
You know, some of those fun things?
Now, as a history teacher, I didn't have my students raise mealworms.
That
didn't really seem to make sense.
You probably could have had some kind of historical connection to silkworms or
perhaps.
I'm sure you could have drawn a connection there, but.
One of the things I had my students do, I had them do was a creative project for history, and I would let them use whatever talent they wanted. It could, like, some of them would write poems, history related poems, or I remember some of them writing rap songs.
Okay.
I had some build, you know, giant models of like Egyptian pyramids or
sure.
And one that I love that I share this with my students in one of the classes I teach, this was in U.S. history, 11th grade, and this one student, she took two Ken dolls and she put together costumes for each Ken doll. We were studying the Civil War.
Okay.
And so one Ken doll was a Union soldier, one Ken doll was a Confederate soldier, and she made the uniforms look, you know, authentic. And I that really impressed me.
Sure.
So we did things like that. But I can remember dressing up sometimes as a teacher and coming into class, just for fun.
In character.
Yeah. When I was teaching sixth grade social studies and we were studying Japan, and I thought it would be a great idea to come in dressed as a sumo wrestler.
Okay.
With one of those big inflatable outfits.
Sure. Are there pictures that exist of this?
Not that I know of. Not that I know of.
Yeah.
But the students loved it. And I can remember, you know, even years later seeing some of these students, they're like, oh yeah, I remember when you dressed up, you know, like these different characters.
Yeah. Well, and it makes it fun.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it's so much more memorable. I mean, I remember, and it's been a lot of years, those teachers that really made things engaging.
Yeah.
You know, that went kind of the extra mile to capture your attention, and make it interesting. And I feel like with history, especially telling stories,
and there
are those things that you can do that just make it so engaging.
Absolutely. Yeah, our skits, like sometimes I'd have them like role play or act out historic events. And like I can remember like it was the Boston Massacre. And so they were pretending, you know, they had the Bostonians, you know, and they were supposed to be throwing like rocks and seashells at the redcoat, the British soldiers.
Uh-huh.
And so they got paper wads, you know, and they got up there and, you know, we're throwing them at the soldiers and I don't know. I mean, I guess if something like that may seem silly, but at the same time, it hopefully makes it more meaningful.
Sure. Sure. It's fun and memorable.
Right.
And to me, I think if history class is not that way in some sense, then you're kind of missing out, because you can memorize facts all day long, but making it memorable and engaging can really make those things stick.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. History, if it's just memorizing names and dates and facts, I love history, but I wouldn't enjoy it if that's all it was.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much more than that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's take a short break, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about what you do at Tech.
All right.
Okay, welcome back. Talking with Mr. Chuck Craig, advisor at Tennessee Tech University, instructor, former teacher, lots of different roles. Before we jump into that part, I do want to ask you, having so many family members in the classroom, I know you have lots of dinner conversations about the classroom and how much it has changed. I know there are things that are the same. Kids are still kids, but the classroom that you were in and that you worked in versus what they're experiencing today in their classrooms. What does that look like?
Yeah, well, especially with Renee, my wife, we have a lot of discussions, and I've been out of the like high school, middle school classroom for 19 years.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot has changed. I think one of the biggest things just technology in general and how it's been incorporated into instruction. But I think too, just the role of smartphones, social media, those were all things that when I was teaching or stopped teaching middle school, high school, those really were not issues like they are now.
Mm-hmm.
And and I'm glad to see the state of Tennessee with its new laws and
mm-hmm.
Putnam County and how they are really cracking down on the use of smartphones during the school mm-hmm. hours. I know it's tough and it's a big adjustment this school year, and I know Renee's talked about that, but at the same time, she said that she's noticed students are talking to each other more.
Mm-hmm.
They're interacting more. They're not looking at their phone screen. They're not trying to get out of class to go, you know, or they can't communicate on the smartphones to say, hey, meet me at the bathroom at this time, you know, whatever. So I really do believe that smartphone use being curtailed mm-hmm. in the schools is a move in the right direction. And I think it'll be interesting to see what the results of that mm-hmm. will be, especially after several years of mm-hmm. doing that.
And it's funny that we've come full circle with that, because, you know, so you were in the classroom around 2008 is, you know, when the iPhone came out.
Yeah. 2006 2005. Yeah.
And so whenever the, you know, iPod Touch, iPhone, whenever they came, you know, it came out and really started to grow, even myself, I was like, well, this is a great tool. I mean, there's going to be some really great things. We can replace a calculator. You know, students aren't going to have, you know, school's not going to have to try to buy computers for everybody. Everybody's going to have this powerful tool right here in their pocket. And a lot of schools, I mean, were exploring that. You know, they tried to find ways to integrate it and use it and like, okay, let's take the phones out and do this and that. But we've come full circle and it's gotten really, and I think probably before social media was so prevalent, it was probably still okay. I mean, there were still uses where, you know, you could do that, put people in a group and they could research a topic. Yeah. But it's just almost out of control,
right?
So much that I think stopping it has been the best choice.
Well, and like the cyberbullying that happens with social media, and you know, kids who have even taken their own lives as a result. I mean, it's just tragic. And there's a balance. And it's not that I'm not, obviously I'm not anti social media or anti smartphones. I have a smartphone. I have social media, but there's got to be a balance there. And I think, yeah, hopefully we're moving the pendulum back in the right direction.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. I hope so. And that has been, and I've had lots of conversations in here about that being one of the biggest changes, you know, in schools has been the technology. And obviously now with AI, I see that weaving its way through every subject area in the schools. And I'm sure that your wife and both the boys have seen ways, good and bad, just like we have at the university level,
right?
Good and bad uses of it.
Yeah, it's a tool, and it can be used for good or not so good reasons.
Yeah, so. And it makes you wonder if it'll be something that will come full circle. You know, that I know Putnam County has adopted Magic School for their teachers to use. And there's some limited use with students. They can create classrooms and let them use certain parts. But we also did that with phones in the beginning, you know. And so it'll be fun to see how it progresses and if it remains a useful tool in schools, or if we circle back to pen and paper.
Yeah,
In 10 years,
right?
It's hard to know.
Yeah.
So let's move. Fast forward a little bit and let's talk a little bit about tech. So tell me a little bit about your role for listeners who don't know. And it's funny because in some ways at Tech, we mirror some of the things that we see in K-12. And I think people are surprised sometimes to know. So just talking to an elementary school principal and for that elementary school, there are almost 70 people in that school for those kids. And so you know, you think about the number of kids and having a teacher in a classroom, but then you've got literacy coaches and math coaches and you've got counselors and all these people that are there to support. And so I feel like at Tennessee Tech, you know, the role, the advising role is something that has grown from that. And I know it has a lot of moving parts. So tell us a little bit about what you do and what all that consists of.
Okay. Yeah, so my main role at Tech is an academic advisor. Currently, I work with roughly just under 200 undergraduate students. Most of those are pursuing a teaching license. And the ones I have are either pursuing secondary ed, which is mostly high school or middle school, special education, computer science education, or ESL. And if there is such a thing as a typical day, I spend most of my time meeting one-on-one with my students, my advisees, responding to emails. A lot of times they'll just send me an email with a question, also attending other meetings. Each fall and spring semester, I also normally teach maybe one or two sections of FOED 2050. That's Education and Technology. It's normally taken by freshmen and sophomores pursuing teaching, and it's an introduction to the teaching profession. And I really enjoy teaching that class for many reasons. For one, it allows me to keep teaching and helps me stay current in the profession. And then also it allows me to get to know and see some of my advisees in a different capacity, a different environment. And I like that, you know, that I get to spend that time in the classroom and interact with my students, my schedule at Tech is much more varied than it was when I was teaching, say, high school, middle school. I feel, and I like that. I prefer the variety that I have in my schedule, and also the little more freedom with my schedule. I do sometimes miss teaching history, you know, high school, middle school, but what I do now at Tech, I like much better than when I was a teacher. Not that I didn't enjoy it, but and I don't miss the stress that comes with the high stakes standardized testing and that we had in high school and middle school.
Yeah, and that has increased. Gosh, it's increased so much. I feel like, you know, almost anybody that you ask is they're going to say there's too much testing. You know,
I would agree. And I think there is too much.
It's like where is that balance?
Yeah,
along the way,
it's valuable. It's not that it's not valuable. I just personally feel like we have gone too far in too much testing, and that's a lot of instructional time that's lost with all the benchmark testing and everything that they do throughout the year. And I understand there's value to it, but then too, you have some students who, you know, I always hear, you know, from people in the system, how some students might just Christmas tree a test and not even try to answer it. And so my question is, what is that going to do for the data that's being collected?
Sure. Sure. Where's the value?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Okay, well let's take a short break and then we'll come back and we'll dig in a little more to what you do with the Tech students.
All right,
thank you. Okay, welcome back. Talking with Mr. Chuck Craig, advisor instructor at Tennessee Tech University. So we were talking a little bit about the day to day things that you do, and I know that just talking through a schedule with students gets messy sometimes. I know that when there are licensure changes and department changes and curriculum changes, how does that impact? Do the students freak out when they hear about those changes?
Yes. Yeah, it can be very challenging, and it's always, it seems like it's always a moving target trying to advise students through not only the courses that they need to take, and then that can change as they're going through the program, but also when you throw in all of the what we call benchmarks, the licensure requirements, the praxis tests, the background checks, all of those things. It's a lot. And so when things change, yeah, students, and understandably so, can freak out about that. Mm-hmm. I freak out sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. How are we going to get that done before things start? Well, and even, you know, and I think for the listeners, maybe not knowing all of the requirements, all of the things that are placed on our future teachers, all the hoops they have to jump through, even down to first aid and CPR, you know, that they have to be certified to do that before they graduate. And it's not even a class. I mean, it's just like an expectation that they do it. And I think it's a good thing that they have that, but there are so many hoops that they jump through. I think sometimes it gets overlooked.
Yeah.
All those stressors.
Oh yeah.
Students to make it to graduation.
Yeah, well, and there's extra money involved too, like with the praxis test, for example. You know, it's not cheap; it's expensive, so that can be a stressful thing for students. And we do have a scholarship, you know, that we for students who are in financial need that we can help pay for the praxis, which may be something a lot of people don't know about, but that's a nice thing that we offer to students.
It is a big help, especially for students that, you know, struggle to pay for that praxis test, because they can range from $100 to $500. There are some tests that are $500.
Yeah.
For licensure. So it can be tough for those college students to do that on their pathway to be a teacher along the way. So I know that there are some other things that you work on specifically, but also know that one of the things that you get to accomplish is helping influence students who are going to be teachers. So just day to day and in a class, what does that kind of look like for you? Because I know that role has changed. So just teaching middle school kids history versus working with students who are going to be teachers and how you can have that impact with them in the classroom.
Yeah, well, there's a lot there. So, you know, yes, I help the students basically navigate, you know, all the course requirements and benchmarks and everything. But two, I hope that I can be an encouragement to my advisees who I believe will be exceptional teachers, but maybe they're having some doubts about it. And I can encourage them just to keep going when maybe they might want to give up. And then there's other times I have students who maybe are really struggling in their pursuit of becoming a teacher for whatever reason. And so maybe teaching's not a good fit for them. And so I can hopefully kind of gently nudge or assist them with finding a different major, a different career that would be a better fit. And you know, of course, we all know that there's a huge demand for teachers and we need teachers, but also we need people who are all in it, who want to be a teacher. If they're just not there, then they really don't need to be a teacher. And so hopefully I can help students who are not all in with getting them on a different path, because, you know, if you're not all in on being a teacher, if it's not a calling to you, then you're not doing yourself a favor by being a teacher. You're not doing the students a favor, and likely you won't last in very long. And so, you know, hopefully I can help with providing the best
with those decisions.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's, I mean, there are hard conversations along the way. And we have had people who, and especially because some students come in young, you know, they start at 18 and they've already got 45 credits out of the way. And so they're ready to graduate at 20. And so sometimes we have had some students who aren't ready to go to the classroom, but they still want to do it. You know, they are still pretty sure they want to teach. And so, you know, we do have some that come that just graduate with a non-licensure track and then they come back and get their master's.
Yeah.
You know, and by the time they finish a graduate degree, they've matured a little bit and they're more ready for the classroom along the way. And so I think that guidance is so helpful.
Yes.
You know, having the resources, all the having been there so long, like some of us have been, having that knowledge to say, and you're worried about passing this licensure test, but here are all the resources. You know, let me direct you to all these things that we have here to help you.
Yeah.
I think we do that well.
Yeah, I agree.
At Tennessee Tech.
I agree.
Yeah. To have that support mechanism along the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the rest of the time that you're there, I know you do have a lot of hats. And so I know there's committee work. So for example, I know you were on the Gen Ed restructure committee. So talk a little bit about what that looked like.
Yeah. The general education courses would be basically, you know, the math, English, science, humanities, history, social sciences, everybody has to have for their degree, no matter the major. We really haven't changed it. It's been probably easily 20 years or so.
100 years?
Yeah, 100, a long time.
100 years?
And so we just wanted to revisit that and look at maybe some of the peer institutions, other universities, and just see what they have. And we got a lot of really good ideas. And really, I think it's just broadening the general education requirements, making it more flexible, maybe, you know, bringing in courses, because right now it's very strict and it's only specific courses. And so we were looking to open that up somewhat and just give some more flexibility.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I was glad that you're on that committee to have that input, you know, based on what you see with our teachers, because there's some realities there. You wouldn't expect a middle school math teacher to take 5 history classes.
No.
You know, and so to me, you're being in that corner to kind of have that balance. But I also think it's good for people to know that it's not the same as it was 100 years ago.
Yeah.
That you know, we've made some efforts to update those categories and add in, I know one of the courses is financial and digital literacy. So to me, that's a very relevant addition to to a gen ed offering along the way.
Yeah.
So I think those types of things will help our teachers along the way. So there is a shortage of teachers. So what are your thoughts, having been in the classroom and spending all this time working with teachers, future teachers, what are your thoughts on getting more in and keeping them in the classroom?
Well, I know one of the challenges has been teacher salary, low salary. And I do commend the governor of Tennessee, Governor Lee, and the state for, I think they plan next year to have it, the minimum pay for teachers go to $50,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely a move in the right direction. It's still not enough, in my opinion. It needs to be higher, but I am. That's one issue, is to retain teachers is the salary. I think another is, well, just goes back to the standardized testing and how much it's tied to a teacher keeping their job, their tenure, if they have tenure.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's not just that, obviously. I mean, there are classroom observations, but I think that overemphasis has put a lot of stress on teachers, and I think creates some burnout.
Mm-hmm.
So those would be a couple of ways. I think, too, I just encourage, administrators to really support their teachers, to remember that they really should be there to serve the teachers,
mm-hmm.
not the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be a way to retain teachers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Those are just a few things.
Yeah. And I know you have those conversations with our pre-service teachers that are coming along. And to me, it's such a fine balance between sharing the realities of teaching, but also encouraging the students to stick with that passion. When you see that, you don't want to discourage it, but I feel like we also try to be realistic in the expectations that teachers have in the classroom.
Yeah.
And so I imagine you have those conversations quite a bit.
Oh yeah. And one thing I tell my students in FOED 2050 and advisees is that teaching, it can be the most rewarding profession in the world, but it could also be the most difficult profession in the world. There are a lot of challenges. I mean, everything from classroom management, discipline issues, irate parents, lots of standardized testing, lots of things. And just that it can be very rewarding, but once again, it's something you've got to really have a passion and want to do. You've got to be all in.
Mm.
That's just so critical.
And to find that area that you're passionate about, even people who only want to work with the little kids, I only want to do elementary, then good. I'm glad that, let's get you in some experiences and let's make sure, figure out that grade level that you're happy in. And if it's first grade, then let's keep you in first grade. Let's not put you in eighth grade classroom teaching, those older kids or high schools. To me, that's a big part. And I know you have those conversations all the time about them being in the right spot.
That's exactly right.
Yes. Along the way. So, well, very good. Well, we've reached the end of our time, and I'll always have more questions than time.
But yeah, I have more to say, but always, that's okay. Always. I'll have to stop.
Yeah, but I appreciate you coming out and chatting about teaching and education.
Well, yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you.